This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Yeah, I've always felt that. I mean, every draft has like just pockets that you just don't fall into. And again, if you're going to be disciplined and you're going to let the board kind of dictate how you do things, it just happens that way. So because of that, you end up in some really cool situations and really acquiring talented players. It might come from a different position that maybe you would have liked to, but at the end of the day, you're increasing the talent on your football team. And I do think you can get into a lot of trouble if you start trying to manipulate things to get into certain pockets where you end up hurting your team long term.
You're listening to Score Evenings, weeknights 6 to 9. Here's your host, Mark Grody.
It's me. I am here until 9 o'clock. We are hoping to be joined by Brian Baldinger. Baldy! Hopefully to get his breakdown on some of these Bears draft picks here in just a second. That was Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Chicago Bears, talking about the running back situation and the board not falling their way and the Bears either not desiring to move up or not being able to move up to go snag one of the running backs in the draft. And things started the way I took in round two of the draft, you know, where the Bears ended up having the 3 second rounders. It was like, okay, there's Cleveland at the top of the board. And they're thinking about Carson Schlesinger out of UCLA, the linebacker. Okay, good. Bears don't really need a linebacker at the moment. Linebackers are nice and they're fun, but that's cool. Yeah, you take Cleveland, you go ahead and take all the linebackers because we're all thinking running back here. And then Houston, it's like, oh, they go get a wide receiver, Jaden Higgins. Bears aren't going to draft a wide receiver, are they? They're not, the Bears don't need wide receivers. So they go get the kid out of Iowa State, does Houston. And then here comes Seattle. Like, they're not going to ruin this for everybody and take a running back. And then they end up going with Nick Emenwari, the safety out of South Carolina, which is really, I think, that's a player worth watching. Like, he was the top safety on most of the boards. So he ends up going to Seattle. Low-key, I was kind of thinking, if that guy was to drop to the Bears, then do you tinker with that just because Jaquan Brisker and you just don't know about the injuries and the concussions and all of that. And then Cleveland, there they come again. They were hoarding draft picks this year at number 36 overall in the second round. They take Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State off of the board. So, okay, getting a little bit more nerve-wracking. And then Miami goes and takes a guard. Okay, we're back in business. Jonah Savalinia, common spelling. They take him out of Arizona. And now the Bear, two picks away, right? Two picks away. And it's here comes the Patriots at 38. They take Luther Burden, or excuse me, they take Travion Henderson at number 38 overall, and then the Bears take Luther Burden, and all bets are off. I think the Bears wanted Travion Henderson. I don't think that they are obviously they're very pleased with the Burden pick. And you know my take on the Luther Burden pick. Of course, I was shocked just like the rest of you that they went wide receiver, that they went positionally in the second round after taking Roma Dunze in the first round last year. That did seem like a little bit of gluttony. I see you, Anthony Heron. A little bit of gluttony. But then I thought, what the hell are you talking about, Grody? You've been watching this franchise your whole life, and you're getting old. So you've been watching this franchise for a long damn time. It's the most insane thing in life. In life, not just sports, but in life, to say the Chicago Bears have enough wide receivers. They've got enough offense. They're going to be just fine. So that's kind of what my mindset was watching that draft and seeing. It took me like 5 minutes to come to grips with Luther Burden and say, yeah, they could use another wide receiver. And Ben Johnson is cooking something up here, obviously. He probably had his hand in that to some degree. And then the Saints, of course, took Tyler Shuck, the quarterback out of Louisville, and the rest is history. The one more thing about the draft here, and hopefully we'll get the Baldy here in a second. He's got a breakdown. Maybe he's still working on the breakdown. Hopefully we'll get Brian
Baldy.
Okay. All right. I see you, Studs. Adam Studzinski, our executive producer. Shout out to him. Trash Panda. Much love. My Bears brother, 217 Ben. Right. That's the top text right now. There's a lot of love out there for Adam Studzinski. The only thing that really made me angry in the draft was the Cleveland Browns at number 5. See, it's the Browns, man. Do you realize the Browns kind of, in their own little way, screwed the Bears over twice, taking Travion Henderson, and then they take Mason Graham. That was the guy that, like, at the end, after going through the mock draft season, and we all have our, it's a very emotional time during the draft because we're always changing our picks, and you fall in love with guys. Mason Graham was my first love in the draft. He was first my guy. Tyler Warren moved up the rankings for a while. Then when draft day came along, I was like, bring me Mason Graham. And there were people saying that he might drop to the Bears, and then he didn't drop to the Bears. So it was very disappointing. The Ashton Jeanty stuff was real. The Bears were talking about potentially moving up. Obviously, the price was not right, and the Jets probably were, the Raiders were like, no, we're taking him. So that wasn't a shock. A little bit disappointed because we're all excited. But that was not smoke. That was a real thing that was going on with the Chicago Bears. We're going to stand by for Brian Baldinger. Hopefully he will be here. But this gives me a chance to get back into some more of the Cubs because we barely touched on it when it came to Paul Skeens. We have been doing this thing this year, and understandably to some degree, because the schedule has been so tough early on for the Cubs, you can look at a series against the Dodgers and San Diego and Arizona and Philadelphia and say, yeah, those are some pretty serious tests. This could be a playoff preview. They're passing tests, and you go into the series thinking if you could beat this team, then maybe you're for real. I buy into some of that. But guess what? The Chicago Cubs today passed, if we're going to do the test thing, the Cubs passed their most important test that they could possibly have passed today, and that was being on Paul Skeens. Cubs beat Paul Skeens and the Pirates today 8-3. Shout out to Colin Ray, still thrown in the mid-90s. Booney was talking about him a little bit earlier. But this is the most important day that the Cubs have had all season because the Cubs have had a hell of a time. Part of the reason the breakup of the 2016 Cubs, when they did break it up, was the contact was bad, and they were getting dominated by those ace type of pitchers. And I get it. It's hard to hit against those guys. It's hard for everybody. But eventually, you got to figure out a way to hit those guys, or you're not going to go anywhere in the postseason because those are the guys that you are facing. The Cubs, right from the beginning of this game today, forget everybody else out there. The Pirates suck. I get it. But Paul Skeens is an elite right-handed pitcher in Major League Baseball. The first guy up, Ian Happ, takes 96 and turns it around, rips it, batting lefty, obviously, rips the ball into right field, like right away. Right, that's a hell of a sign. It took a while for the bats to get going for the Cubs. but they were making contact. This wasn't like some Skeens pass starts, even against the Cubs, where he's striking everybody out and he's blowing guys away. What I saw from Paul Skeens today was a guy who was a little bit hesitant against what he knows is a legitimate lineup. That's the way it felt. Like, you just saw him missing his spot, staying away from guys. He had some help from the umpire today. I mean, plenty of help from the home plate umpire today. But I saw a pitcher who was hesitant today because of the respect that he has for the Cubs lineup. So this, to me, this was the most exciting, most interesting, and most important. Even if the Cubs had lost this game somehow, I would have looked at it as half a win just because of what they did against. Look, Paul Skeens had 4 walks today. I think he had 5 walks coming in. I got to look, but that's not part of his repertoire. That Paul Skeens doesn't walk a whole hell of a lot of guys. He walked 4. That tells you that he was staying away from the Cubs today. Struck out 2 only. 5 innings. Let me just give it to you. 5 innings, allowed 3 runs on 5 hits, 4 walks, and 2 strikeouts. Circle those walks, man, because that tells you everything you need to know, that a pitcher that is typically under control was not under control against this Cubs lineup. And it was in the 5th inning. It was just beautiful. It was like it. I was like, okay, Cubs, you're getting on this guy. Let's get some runs going. And there it was in the 5th inning. Dansby Swanson, genius, by the way. Craig Counsell moving him down the lineup. Dansby Swanson, Kyle Tucker, Seiya Suzuki, homer off of Paul Skeens in the 5th inning. Seiya hit 2, by the way. Man, he is keep it going, Seiya. Keep it going. Don't make us all have to be like, man, it didn't seem like he had a great year. And then everybody's like, oh, he had this great OPS. Look at the numbers. Look at the numbers. No, I'll know. I'll tell you when Seiya Suzuki is good, okay? He's been really good, though, so far to begin this season. But, yeah, so that was the best Cubs season the best Cubs inning that I've seen this year against the best pitcher that they have faced this year. So, yeah, ton of contact against him. He was nibbling. It just, the Cubs had him rattled from the beginning based on what they have done so far this season. A couple of other things in this game. Cubs in the second home run he hit, man, in the 7th inning, it's 3-2 Cubs. He hits a 2-run homer. It's 5-2. They had those add-on runs. Michael Busch, a 2-out. 2-run single in the 9th inning. That's the stuff, man. That's the good stuff. Those add-on runs. Those are fun runs, and that's what winning teams do, and everybody knows it. Okay, guess what? Guess what? From the Cubs to the Bears. We are now joined by, I am pleased to tell you that we are joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. What's going on, Baldy? You're on the Score, man. Thanks for joining us.
I hate to bust, knock all your baseball fans out to talk football, but I'm happy to join you, Mark.
Don't you worry, man. I am like a minute man. I am at a moment's notice. I am in my life, Baldy. I am ready to talk football and ready to talk about the Bears. I only want to know if you are in a body of water right now or if you are stationary at the moment.
I'm stationary. I was in a body of water today, but it was really choppy and the visibility wasn't great. So I didn't spend a lot of time out there today. So but maybe sometime tomorrow this weekend for sure.
Okay. You know, this is shame on me for not knowing this, but I hear you do some of your breakdowns in the water too. Is that a thing? Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, that's real. That's real. Like I live on the water. When I'm down in Fort Lauderdale, I have a place in Fort Lauderdale. When I'm down here, I'm in the water every day. So whatever, I'm just looking for big things that are swimming around. I don't care what they are. I'm wide open. I like to be entertained.
That's hilarious, man. I love it. Let's get into it. If we may draw on your breakdowns, I'm going to start right at the top with the Bears and their first round pick and Colston Loveland, the 6'6", 248 tight end out of Michigan. Break it down for us, Baldy.
Yep, I mean, he's a good target. I think the reason why he was taken over maybe Tyler Warren from Penn State was he looks like he's got a little more suddenness to him. a little bit more ability to separate from man coverage. And he's a good target. And so there were two guys that were definitely charted to go in the top half of the first round. They both did at, both at number at 10 and at 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a question of your taste. I mean, Colston didn't have nearly the level of production that Tyler Warren did, but they didn't target him the way they did Tyler Warren at Penn State. And so that was part of it. But certainly, two great prospects. And Chicago said, look, we're going to team them up right now with Cole Kmet. We'll be in, two tight end sets a majority of the time. And we've got two guys that can go get it, that can get open, that are good targets for our young quarterback.
Oh, sorry about that, Baldy. Tyler Warren, that you mentioned him as well. Did you think that the Bears were going to take Warren? Did you think that he was the top tight end in the draft?
I thought he was the top tight end. I was at Penn State's pro day. I got a chance to meet him. He doesn't say too much. He's a pretty quiet kid. He lets his play and do the talking. But he had 104 catches. He had 24 runs that were either wild card, fake passes. He scored 4 touchdowns. He's got that element to his game. I just thought, and then just the way that he plays, he's just a tough, really tough kid. I think he's a better blocker than Colston is right now. That's not to say that Colston can't develop, but I thought he was a better blocker at this point. It's not a great sample size of him blocking the edge, but there's enough there that it looked like he's a little further along right now blocking the edge.
Let's move on to one of the Bears' 3 second-round picks with number 39 overall in the draft. The Bears surprised some people, going with the wide receiver Luther Burden III. What can you tell us about him based on what you have seen on tape?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to take the top 4 or 5 receivers, Matthew Golden, Tet McMillan, whatever, Luther Burden, you could literally have a conversation every day about who's the best. Because there's days when you say Luther Burden's the best because of what he can do after the catch. He reminds you of Deebo Samuel after the catch, but he caught most of his balls from in the slot at Missouri from Brady Cook, but he also had catches outside the slot. But he is a dynamic player with the ball in his hands. And so I applaud the Bears. If you want to have DJ Moore and Roma Dunze, I don't know exactly how they're going to line up yet. We've seen guys move around, but to me it looks like Rome and DJ are your outside guys, and it looks like Luther Burden could easily go inside and be that guy inside in this offense right now. That's kind of, that's what they did in Detroit, and I kind of think like they're going to do a lot of the same things in Chicago now.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like they're comping all of these players to the Detroit players, like different versions of the guys that played for the Lions. It's going to be interesting to see what Ben Johnson does with these guys and who he really sees as the premier guys. Because you mentioned that already here is DJ Moore, who wants the football, should get the football. Roma Dunze, a developing player. Then you bring in Luther Burden. You have Colson Loveland. You have Cole Kmet. Don't forget about Cole Kmet. Is this a difficult job? I mean, it just seems like a really hard job to figure out how the offense is going to work with all of the different pieces that the Bears have. Is this tough? Is this going to be tough for Ben Johnson?
No, not if you're winning. Last year we heard things from DJ, when they weren't winning. But when you're winning, you never heard anything in Detroit because they were winning the last 2 years. Amon-Ra St. Brown had, 100 catches, but you never heard from anybody else. Jameson Williams, you didn't hear that he was getting 2 targets in a game. Like, when you're winning, when Jahmyr Gibbs was splitting carries with David Montgomery, you never heard from him saying I need more carries. When you're winning, there's just no room for any of that. Even, with Philadelphia, A.J. Brown can be known to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're winning, maybe he's reading a book on the sideline, but he's not saying anything. So that takes care of everything. When you're winning, then whatever role you have that Sunday to help you win, that's what your role is.
Yeah, I mean, I think about Randy Moss when he went to the Patriots, and it was like, hey, you better act accordingly because winning's about to happen. I said this on the air too, Baldy. Like, we ask athletes all the time. I cover the Bears on a regular basis, and what the thing that players all say is, hey, whatever I got to do to help the team win. I guess we put that to the test this year, right?
Well, I mean, that's look, going back to Randy Moss. I mean, he was on the bench and with the Raiders before he went to the Patriots, and he thought his career was in the toilet. And he went to the Patriots, and he set a record for touchdown catches in the season. Now, Tom Brady helped that. But, no, I mean, it is about winning. And I don't have a lot of patience to listen to guys barking when you're winning, and they're barking about whatever it is, their stats, their numbers, the catches, the targets, whatever. I don't have a lot of patience to listen to that stuff.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man, and I appreciate that attitude for sure. A couple other guys I want to ask you about before we get you out of here, and that would be the first offensive lineman that they took this year in the second round, Ozzie Trapillo out of BCU. We heard Ryan Poles indicating on the Bears flagship station today that they want to give him a look at left tackle, but he was a right tackle. What do you think is realistic for Trapillo this year?
Well, he looks like a natural right tackle. You know, he's awfully tall. I mean, he's over 6 foot in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but he's been their starting right tackle, Boston College, for 3 years. He's a good player. You know, I think from a mental standpoint, I'd be surprised if he blows assignments. He looks like he thinks quick on his feet. He's got great length. He looks like a natural right tackle. Now, I think he's got to get stronger. I think there's a lot of room for him to get stronger. But, you know, some guys can go right side, left side. I mean, I played on the right side and the left side. Some guys, it's a little bit more natural for some guys than other guys, but I've seen players do it. And it's just a question, like right now, you know, if Braxton's their starting left tackle and, you know, Rice is starting right tackle, then maybe he's their swing guy. And maybe he gets a chance to compete with Braxton at left tackle. But, you know, if I was him, I'd start working on my sets at left tackle. Maybe he already has. Maybe he's done that already. He didn't have to play left tackle at Boston College. But, you know, if I was him, I'd start working on my sets at left tackle. If that gets me on the field quicker, earlier, if I could become the swing tackle game day, and that's my role in my rookie season, then go do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a valuable position. We know that the injuries can be frequent. They can, hey, man, they could just be a series or two. So to have that guy that can come in, maybe Karan Amagaji does some of that as well. But I do like that idea. If that's where he is, that's not the worst thing in the world. Eventually, I'd like to be him a starter. But in his rookie year, that would be cool. Last dude I want to ask you about. It's a very interesting prospect, another second-rounder, defensive lineman, Shamar Turner out of Texas A&M, who goes from the outside to the inside. What do you see from Turner on tape?
Well, I mean, look, he was taken about where he was projected to go. He was projected to go in the second or third round. He's very bottom of the second round. But he's got tremendous size. You know, he's over 6'3", he's 290, he's got long arms. You know, he's a big guy. Can he play a three technique? Can he play over the guard? Can he play an inside four eye? I mean, I think he's got some flexibility to where you play him right now, depending on, you know, what the defense looks like right now. So I would think immediately with what they have right now that he's going to fit in the mix of what they have in Chicago. I mean, I know, you know, they brought in Grady Jarrett, who's a natural three technique, and he's a really good player. You know, he's getting up there. But, you know, they've got depth at that position now for the first time with Javon and with Billings, you know, some guys. So I think he works into the mix right now of rotational players. I think just based off his size and, you know, the fact he plays a good pad level, he plays with good technique right now.
Baldy, thank you so much, man. Looking forward to tracking some of your breakdowns in the water. Will there be one coming soon that I can check out?
Well, you know, it's hogfish season right now,
okay,
and it's grouper season.
Oh.
So, you know, as soon as the water clears up, you know, I'd like to get my hands on some of those creatures.
Oh yeah, man, that's good eating, isn't it?
That's the best. You get that hogfish cleaned right, like you're going to feast.
Oh.
You're going to feel like this is better than lobster.
Man, that's saying a lot, especially the fresh stuff. Baldy, you're the best. Thanks for coming on The Score, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. When I was growing up, we used to, our vacation that we would take in the Grody family is we would literally get into a station wagon and drive to St. Augustine, Florida. That was where we would go. We would camp with the family, and then my mom had had enough of camping. There would be no more camping. It would be all condos. She couldn't handle it anymore. But one of the things that we did is we would go deep sea fishing. And I'm not a fisherman, but like it was just cool. Like, we're in Florida. Let's get on one of these boats and go deep sea fishing. One of the boats that we went out on, we go out there, and we caught, we were on a boat, part of a group of people, of tourists, whomever, visiting Florida, going deep sea fishing. And we caught about these angelfish, I think they were, like hundreds of them. Like, there was like this school of them. It was like a...
We got weights and fish! There we go!
That's right. That's right. And it was so amazing. So we get back to the shore or to the dock or however you say that. And there were like media waiting because the word had gotten around in St. Augustine, Florida, the oldest city in America, by the way, that there was a record haul in deep sea fishing. And I was on that boat. Picture was taken. It was something to see. Everybody ate well that night, and that was good eating too. But the grouper and the grumper, they're all very good fish.
Just that's a long way to go to camp, by the way. That's a long drive to camp.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, yeah. You can't.
You can camp around here, man.
Well, no, but it's an ocean. We don't have an ocean here. Yes.
I know. I think your mom got it right by deciding you're going to do condos.
No, she was right. It was much better in the condo. Like, it was, you know, we had a pop-up camper. There's a little, I don't know if they still even make pop-up campers, but that's what we had. Hitched it onto the back of the, I mean, we were the Griswolds. We really were. You know, we didn't take over any amusement parks or anything, but
And your mom's the only girl, right? Is it you, your brothers, and your dad?
That is correct. Oh, yeah. There was a lot of...
It's a lot of testosterone.
The amount, there was on average three "we're going to turn this car around" moments, because the brothers, and we were all like 2 years apart. There's a lot of fighting. I'm not just talking about like the bickering. It would get physical too, and the car would stop, and we'd turn around, and we'd start to go back. We'd cry, and then we would go. It's a whole thing. If I ever write a book, there will be long chapters about trips to St. Augustine, Florida, and the caravan too, because we went with neighbors. We got to take a break. 312-644-6767. I see some of your text messages, including, Mark, do you have a Cubs-Cardinals bet with Chris Ranji? I don't think Chris Ranji cares. He's too wrapped up in politics right now. That's all he wants to talk about is politics. So I don't think so. I'm Mark Grody. This is The Score.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mark Grody with you on The Score. Aaron Lemming going to talk Bears with us at 8 o'clock. I'm here with you until 9 o'clock. Text message is coming in at 312-644-6767. The guy who fell 21 feet over the Clemente Wall onto the right field warning track at PNC Park has been identified as Kevin Markwood, 20 years old. He remains in critical condition today. Again, after falling during the Cubs-Pirates game the previous night. I'm going to give you some more details. I'm going to read to you guys like the latest on what's going on. Again, he's in critical condition, 20 years old, and we'll get some more deets here in a second. But first, I got to give a big shout-out to Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer, because it was a devastating moment, and I'm sure, at PNC Park, of course. I mean, I've seen the video, and it makes you sick to your stomach. It really does. And you watch it, and you try to see what's going on. Did he get pushed? Did he jump? Was he drunk? And I don't know any of that stuff, but you watch it, and yeah, that's the reaction. It's like, oh my God, it's just, he looks like a rag doll. It's that ugly. But you still got to tell us what's going on. And I didn't feel like I was getting that. Like, what is happening here? Like, what is there emergency vehicles out there? Is somebody being tended to? Is he moving? I just wasn't getting what I needed to get. Part of me understands, because you don't know what to say. You don't know. It's sensitive. You're in a bad place because of what you just witnessed. But I turned on The Score, and I heard Pat and Ron given that, and they talked about, I mean, for the entire time, but just a little sampling of how this horrible moment went down on The Score with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer.
And the Pirates have taken a 4-3 lead.
Well, and I think in this play, Pat, somebody has fallen out of the stands. Oh my, This is scary. Somebody leaning over the stands in the outfield in right field has fallen onto the field.
No. And the trainers are going to head out. And we're going to get the binoculars on the body out there. What a terrible thing to see. Somebody laying on the ground. And the medical people are hustling. They've got the little flatbed truck to help take this person away. Never seen such a thing run.
No.
Awful. Just awful.
You know, you just terrible.
You're going to put the person on the stretcher. Some medical people are lifting the body. Oh, unbelievable. The players are all kind of on their knees in the infield, hoping that this person is going to be okay.
Again, that's Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, talking about the fan that fell out of the stands. And a great job by them, just to tell us what's going on. And even though they're sick to their stomachs, too, I mean, you can tell. But you got to tell us what's going on, and they did a terrific job of that. So here's a little bit more on, I'll just read the part that I read, and then I'll read more. The man who fell 21 feet over the Clemente Wall onto the right field warning track at PNC Park has been identified as Kevin Markwood, 20 years old, remains in critical condition, or remained in critical condition Thursday, today, after falling during the Pittsburgh Pirates-Chicago Cubs game the previous night. The South Allegheny School District official confirmed that Markwood, a 2022 graduate of South Allegheny High School, is the man who fell. Now, here's a quote. "Everyone at South Allegheny would say he is a hardworking, highly resilient young man. He's a fighter. He's going to need that resiliency now, but he has it," district spokesperson Laura Thompson told Trib Live in Pittsburgh. Quote,
He's touched a lot of lives at South Allegheny. We're a small community. He's a household name here. Everybody knows him. He has prayers and the support of South Allegheny community. So it sounds like this is like a pretty cool dude, too. Mark Wood's family members could not immediately be reached for comment. Totally understandable. Former South Allegheny football coach Frank Cortazzo was effusive in his praise of Mark Wood, who was named first-team all-conference and team MVP in his senior year for the Gladiators. Quote, Kevin is not only an outstanding athlete, but an even more exceptional young man. His resilience, heart, and strength are truly unmatched. Cortazzo, now the head coach at East Allegheny, texted the Trib Live. Please keep him, his family, and his friends in your thoughts and prayers as they navigate this challenging time. And then just a little more of the fact stuff in case you're catching up. Mark Wood fell over a three-foot railing in the front row of section 142 in the bottom of the seventh inning while celebrating Andrew McCutcheon's double that drove in the go-ahead runs in a 4-3 win. The drop was 21 feet at the height of the wall, commemorates the Hall of Fame right fielder Roberto Clemente and his retired jersey number. Witnesses told Trib Live that Mark Wood was excited the Pirates were rallying and had taken off his shirt and poured beer on himself before McCutcheon's at-bat. The game was stopped as Pittsburgh police, EMS, and Pirates and Cubs team trainers, as well as PNC Park personnel, attended to Mark Wood as he lay motionless on the ground. He was placed on a stabilizing board, carted off the field, and transported to the Allegheny General Hospital. The Pirates said that, according to the PNC Park architect of record, the railings above the Clemente wall measures 36 inches, exceeding the current code requirement of 26 inches. Phew, don't want to have to go through all that. I mean, we could talk about safety measures in baseball if we want, but at least there was nothing untoward going on, and one would not suspect that at a relatively new ballpark. Pirates chairman Bob Nutting said today, Thursday, in a statement, the team is, quote, deeply saddened and truly heartbroken after the terrible accident, calling it, quote, one of the most difficult moments many of us have ever experienced. We're devastated, Nutting said. Pirates baseball is a community, and our fans are like family. In times like these, we must come together, support one another, and keep him and his loved ones in our prayers. And that's about it. That's about it. There's probably a little bit more to it. But that's what we can tell you. He's in critical condition. And man, do I hope he's okay. I hope he is okay. Duh. We all hope he's okay. But it feels like it would be miraculous if he was okay. That's just the way it feels. Let's take a break. I'm Mark Grody, here till 9 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You're listening to Score Evenings, weeknights 6 to 9.
Falefa standing behind Horner at second pitch. Line drive, deep right field, down the line. If it's fair, it's gone. It's gone! Two-run home run, Pete Crow Armstrong. And the Cubs extend the lead. Now up 4-0 over the Pirates here in the fifth for PCA. That's home run number 6 on the season.
That was part of the Cubs' 9-0 win over the Pirates on Tuesday. Zach Zabin with the call right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score. I'm Mark Grody here with you until 9 o'clock. We're talking Bears at 8 with Aaron Lemming. 3 2-run homers in that game Tuesday, the 9-0 win. And boy, oh boy, PCA. I mean, this is just like, this has all happened, the PCA-ness, like in terms of the rise and where we have gotten to, it's really over the last 2-3 weeks. It wasn't right from the beginning of the season. Could you make an argument that prior to this hot streak, this coming of age, this development that is occurring, we were still seeing some bad habits and some bad things happening, and then all of a sudden, he is powering up. He is putting on a show, continuing to put a show on in the outfield and on the bases. And PCA is starting to become realized. He really is. And I will say this, just because
I've been very hard on the Cubs over the last 4 years. We've been hard. We are hard on teams when they don't develop players the right way, or don't develop players, or just don't do it well. Cubs have kind of put on a clinic when it has come to developing this particular player. When PCA came up last year, he couldn't hit fastballs. Like, he looked overmatched. And he's just, I remember watching, like, bouncing around like a super ball and swinging at everything and missing everything, missing, you know, 92 mile per hour fastballs down the heart of the plate and looking behind and like, what is going on here with this guy? Eventually, he is sent down and, you know, makes his way back up to the bigs. And one thing that Craig Counsell has resisted, and maybe we'll see it, maybe it still will happen, is keeping him high in the batting order. Everybody's, you know, got to hit leadoff because he's so damn fast. But you don't necessarily want a guy hitting leadoff that's not going to work the pitcher, especially in that very first at-bat of a game. How many times did we see Dexter Fowler in the first at-bat of a game, even if he didn't get on base, take 12, 13 pitches? You know what I mean? Like, that, you go, we go. That's why Dexter Fowler was so good. Sometimes that first at-bat of the game really can send a pitcher the wrong idea or the wrong feel for the rest of the game. That's why PCA is probably not the guy you want hitting leadoff still, because he's just swinging at everything. I mean, like, and it's obviously something that the Cubs, I think, are probably saying, yeah, be you, do what you got to do, because he's not. Like, you don't see him taking pitches. He just doesn't do that. So to their credit, while being careful with him and sending him down and keeping him low in the batting order, they've also said, okay, this is who you are. You want to swing? You want to get crazy? You want to like, he ain't swinging to like to bunt to get on base. He's not swinging for singles anymore. He's swinging for the alleys and for home runs at this point. And maybe eventually that will have to be adjusted. But things have changed, and it's happening. Like, we're seeing this development right before our eyes. He's not a star yet, like a superstar, but the traits are there. And you could see it. It's plausible. The manager, Craig Counsell, was on with Spiegel and Holmes the other day. And it's pretty interesting to hear how, like, let me just give you, like, for reference, and you know this if you follow the Cubs and you follow Craig Counsell, he didn't really rave about PCA much last year. You know, he was very hard truths about him in the media. He was very measured, and who knows what it was. I got a feeling there was a lot of tough love backstage with some of the extra stuff that he does, the way he would catch the ball low, and just some of the hot dog stuff. I think that they had to quell some of that and some of the way he plays the game, and I felt like Counsell was very measured about him last year, and I think that was the right approach. Listen to the way Craig Counsell sounds now about PCA.
It's fun because I'm happy for the team and I'm happy for Pete. And it's also fun to watch just a player like that. I mean, these are the kind of people you pay to watch people like this play baseball, man. Like, this is a fun player to watch. Because it's not just what is he going to do as at bats. It's when he's on base. It's on defense. It's entertaining the crowd. It's everything, right? And so, you know, it's fun that player plays for the Cubs, man. Like, we got one of those guys, and our fans should be thrilled about that. It's really cool that we get to watch Pete play, and it doesn't have to always be perfect too, man. Like, it's sometimes it's the failure too, man. That's all right. And it's been fun watching Pete go through it. He's growing up. He's getting better. And I think we're all enjoying watching it.
Isn't that awesome? Like, he sees it. This, again, we all know how measured Craig Counsell is. He does not suffer fools. He's not hyperbolous in any way. Not prone to hyperbole. And now he is, we got one of those guys. And he's right about that. And here's the other thing I was thinking about PCA. He's got power, obviously. We see the power that he has. He's also got power, as in, you got people chanting his name wherever he goes, PCA, wherever he plays. So he has a degree. When you got the fans on your side in Major League Baseball and at Wrigley Field, and you're the most popular guy in the room, That's power. I mean, I hope he doesn't abuse it. And he doesn't seem like the type of guy who would, but I think even Craig Counsell recognizes that. It's like, it's throw your arms up and be like, okay, like the way, maybe it's not exactly the approach that we want at the plate with this guy in terms of just swinging silly at everything. And again, maybe that will have to be adjusted, but that's Craig Counsell saying that this is one of those guys. This is a special, potentially special baseball player. And he's not there yet. He's not there yet, but there's something there, and we're starting to see it. And we got time for this. More Craig Counsell. He talked to the guys about, because, man, there were some games in April. The famous Arizona game. Man, the Arizona game, which pound for pound might have been the most interesting, exciting Cubs game. Ready for this? In history. Here's Craig Counsell about all the fun that they've had in April.
We've had a lot of fun. I mean, last Tuesday night at Wrigley, the Dodger game. April at Wrigley, a warm night. That was fun. Anybody who was there, like, that was a special night. It was just a fun night of baseball. We're playing a great team, and it was a crazy game. And maybe we had no business winning the game, and we somehow pull out a win. And that's just, it's just fun, man. And I think anytime you can have that fun together, absolutely. That's bonding. That's connecting to me. It says you can do it. You kind of put it in your back pocket and you know you got it.
That was big boy baseball, the Cubs Dodgers series. Like, that was like, you watch that, you say, oh, this is big market stuff here. And the Dodgers are a slightly bigger market with the payroll and all the guys that they have, but it's just Wrigley Field. That's as big market as you get. Cubs are big market. Yeah, I know. Dodgers are big market. It was cool. Like, just visually with the sunshine and the Cubs and Dodgers on the field. Here's the only thing I take exception to. And this is the easy narrative to go to, I understand. Like, everybody's saying it's a playoff atmosphere. Man, it's a playoff atmosphere here at Wrigley Field, the Cubs and the Dodgers. No, it's not. No, 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 no. If you are a Cubs fan, and maybe a lot of Cubs fans out there, you haven't been to playoff games. I understand that. It's hard to get tickets to playoff games. Playoff games at Wrigley are a different animal. Never, ever, ever say in a regular season game at Wrigley Field, this is a playoff atmosphere. Wrigley Field comes to life in a different way when it's playoff baseball. So really, that, check yourself. Check yourself on that. That is an insult to Wrigley Field to call an April game No. Not everybody's into every single pitch. Wrigley Field is not rattling. It is not, doesn't have that extra life. So yeah. So let's cool it on that concept. One other cut here from, because this is perfect. This is perfect. Because Dansby Swanson was struggling. Dansby Swanson in the last 2 days has, what's that?
Dansby.
What the hell is that?
Dansby Swanson. You remember, were you part of this conversation? The way Lawrence says his name, because the way he says it in one of the rejoins we have for the Cubs.
No.
Dansby Swanson.
No.
It's like Lawrence's form of country Dansby, basically.
So he's got his Atlanta drawl on, his Georgia drawl. Is that what we're talking about here?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to hear that at some point in time. His approach, though, Craig Counsell, his approach on players who are, like Dansby was, struggling.
The trick is in the baseball season is that every player's struggle during the season. They're going to struggle. You're going to go through bad stretches. And, you know, whether to act on that and how much to and how much to kind of adjust. But I think, yeah, you just kind of communicate with Dansby, and he knows he's struggling and he's trying to figure some things out. And he's also a player that's traditionally kind of been on the far end of the streaky kind of category. Like he has a hot 10 days and that kind of makes up for the rough month. Right. And he gets to the same kind of offensive number pretty regularly in his career. So that's just, you know, you have to kind of ride with that with your players. That's through communication and that's through understanding who they are as players.
Yeah. Hey, Chicago, it's Dansby Swanson.
Oh, yeah, okay. He goes Swanson. Right. Good call. But Swanson homered again today. He was part of the three home runs, Swanson, Tucker, and Suzuki, homering in that fifth inning against Paul Skeens, which was awesome. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, talking more Bears with my guy Aaron Lemming. He will be here from the Bear Report and Windy City Gridiron. Looking forward to talking to Lemming next. I'm Mark Grody on The Score.
Bears.